Welcome to the Project Love podcast. I'm Selena Barker.
And I'm Vicky Pevitt. In these podcasts, we explore what it takes to create a life, relationship, and career you love.
And not just one that looks good on the outside, but one that feels good on the inside. Hello, and welcome to another Project Love episode. It's Selena here today. I am the life design and career change coach of the duo. And in these episodes where I'm flying solo, I like to focus on topics around what it takes to create a life and a career you love. And I like to invite guests onto the show who are willing to deep dive into conversation with me. And there is no one that dives deeper into conversation than my guest today. Tamu Thomas, if you haven't come across her, is the founder of 360. Tamu is honestly one of the wisest people I know. Every conversation I have with her gives me fresh insights, wisdom that blows my mind. And this conversation is probably one of the best conversations I've ever had with her. It's a long one. You're welcome. You will want it to be long. I got so much out of this. We talked about joy, everyday joy, what Tamu actually means by joy, which is really fascinating, how she works with people to live from that place, how she works with people to go from surviving to thriving. We talked about how her experience as a social worker, her own experience of burnout and helping other people that have gone through burnout. And we also talked about, I specifically wanted to talk about this with Tamu because she is a mum. We talked about motherhood without martyrdom and why it is that so many mothers instinctively feel they need to step into a role of self-sacrificing. Honestly, this conversation took us to so many deep and juicy places. I cannot wait for you to listen to it. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. Tamu, thank you so much for joining me today. You know that I love every single... Oh, you're blowing me kisses. Oh. You know how much I love you. And I was just thinking today before we hit record how every single conversation I have ever had with you has left me feeling inspired and uplifted, and like I've been able to connect with that collective wisdom, that river that runs beneath all of life when I talk with you. And so I just can't wait for our conversation today. So thank you for joining me.
Why, thank you, Selena. And I was going to do that thing that we do, but I'm not going to do that thing that we do. Selena, I love deep conversations and I love people that I can have deep conversations with. And I think that, you know, we put our spidey senses out and then our webs capture whoever's supposed to be there. And you certainly, from the moment I saw that smile on Instagram, I knew. I thought, that's one of my people. I know she is. And I think it's really, really refreshing to be able to be in a space whereby social media, that gets a lot of flack, is creating meaningful connections where we can have the conversations, not just the ones that we want to have, but those conversations that we want to have unfold into the conversations we need to have. Mm. And I just love having conversations I need to have with you, my darling. Oh.
Well, look, I have got... That here are the things that I mm-hmm. would like. We'll see where it goes. And I mm-hmm. definitely want, for the listeners who've never come across you, I want them to hear about your story, and that will be mm-hmm. kind of woven throughout. What I would love to talk about today, there's three things that really popped into my mind. Number one, joy. And hello. Let me tell you, it was yesterday on an Instagram post that I put up that was about what have you done to love yourself today? And someone on your membership group said, thanks to Tamu, she said she was topping and tailing her day with a mini spa break, which sounded amazing. And then she said, Tamu is Dr. Joy. And I was hello. Like, oh my God. From now
you know
on.
The Dr. Joy thing is because, you know, when you're in the zone and you are open. You are receiving messages from God, the universe, the ancestors, the angels, the guides. And we were talking, and I firmly believe that you can do deep work from a place of joy. We don't have to be really serious, man, and all of that kind of stuff. And for me, anything that enables us to connect with who we really are, anything that enables us to connect with our body mind, our body wisdom, I am here for it. So in my group membership program, when we were talking through particular issues, songs just kept coming to mind. So I was like, right, my prescription for this piece of work, this inner child work that we're doing right now, once we have finished this work, I prescribe, so, you know, it could be from Luciano Pavarotti, Nessun Dorma, to Yaz, The Only Way Is Up. But there are multiple, the prescription could be a plate of green leafy veg, but I think that there are joyful prescriptions that we can use alchemize that really gritty work into something that is a source of growth and nourishment. So I will take Dr. Joy and run all the way to the Garden of Eden with it.
Well, that is what you will be known as henceforth.
Hello.
Dr. Joy. We've got Dr. Joy on the show today.
Oh, my West African culture is like, finally, a doctor. Hooray!
Whichever way it comes, it's a doctor. It's the title.
Exactly.
Well, I want to talk more about that and how you work with people to find their joy and just all the different ways you work with people. I also really want to talk about burnout because I know that's something you've got all sorts of experience with, and, you know, professionally and personally. And I'm just about to embark on a very exciting project around burnout. So on a completely selfish level, I wanted to hear your thoughts on that. And also, we've discussed this before, I really want to talk about motherhood without martyrdom.
Bring it on.
Because you're a mama and you are not into the whole self-sacrificial way of doing things, and I feel like it's a really big topic that doesn't actually get addressed enough, and it ties in with the joy and the burnout. So yeah, those are the topics that I would like to touch on today.
Easy breezy, come on.
Why don't we start off with how today and also in the past, but how you work with people and the role that joy plays in that?
Well, I will start by defining joy, because we often conflate joy with happiness. And I'm not talking about happiness here, because happiness is wonderful. It has its place, but it's fleeting. When I talk about joy, I talk about something that is very grounding, very nourishing, and something that we are able to lean into in all of life's eventualities, whether they are these beautiful high experiences or they're the experience that makes us think we want to pump the brakes, or sometimes we want to sign out of this, we just want to stay in bed. So when I become particularly interested in a word, I turn to the dictionary to look at the definition, because I'm very keen on being intentional about the words I use, because I think that the words we use on a regular basis become affirmations. So I looked up the meaning of joy, and the Oxford Dictionary and every other dictionary conflates it with happiness. And then I stumbled across a biblical encyclopedia kind of website called Theopedia, and they describe joy as a state of mind and orientation of the heart. It is a settled state of contentment, confidence, and hope. And that is the joy that I'm talking about.
Wow.
Yes. Ooh. I am talking about operating from a grounding sense of contentment, confidence, and hope. Because living, embodying, operating from that space enables you to move through life being able to bring conscious awareness that reminds you that you are not your experiences, you are not your highs, you are not your lows, you are not your output, you are you, and all of those other things that we become obsessed about and think are defining factors are actually pieces of our puzzle. Hence the name of my brand being 360. As I had my breakdown to my breakthrough, I realized that part of my difficulty, part of the stuff that was causing dis-ease, was living in this duality whereby I was only facing 180 degrees and leaving the rest behind me. And once I realized that actually I need to take an integrated approach, I need to give my all of my shades, the darker shades, the lighter shades, as much space within my 360 degrees to become a whole person, I realized that whilst I wasn't doing that, I was just totally embodying my persona and living for my outer expression and was totally disconnected from who I really am and was just taking that everywhere.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. I want to dive more into that. So can you tell us about then your breakdown to breakthrough?
Yeah. So the breakdown was a cumulative breakdown. I didn't have the luxury of having one day, whoomp, there it is. But it gradually built up over a period of about 8 years. And when it got to its, so at the time I was practicing as a social worker, and in that time I progressed from being newly qualified to being, you know, established, to becoming a senior member of staff, to having quite a bit of pressure for me to move up into management and not wanting to, but taking on responsibility of mentoring, buddying and supporting social workers that didn't have as much experience as me, while simultaneously taking more responsibility and managing trickier cases, and also managing a more complex motherhood reality as my child was growing up, and childcare and whatever else. To cut through, I got to a point where I was ill for the majority of the year and just thought that I was weak. I wasn't being strong enough. I wasn't being enough. And so there was lots of internal messages about my constant illness. I was not, although I was doing lots of my job brilliantly, the kind of boring bits like the admin started to suffer. Mm. And rather than explore where that was coming from, again, it was, I wasn't good enough. I wasn't being enough. I should do better. I must. And I know, and I'm not saying this from a really critical place, I am now saying this from a place of understanding, because of all of that and because of the ideals of success I grew up with, I was underparenting my daughter. So I got to a space whereby I started to experience anxiety, but I didn't know that it was anxiety, because the anxiety I saw in my service users looked very different to what I was experiencing. And of course it would. These were people that were in a situation whereby they weren't even operating at survival.
These were the people you were helping and supporting in your role as a social worker.
In my role as a social worker. So while not all of my service users were from a background of intergenerational abuse and neglect that meant that they were unable to reach whatever their true potential was, I also had very wealthy, I had aristocrats, I worked with lords and ladies. Being a human being that is not able to live within their true capacity does not discriminate. We are all impacted by it. But unfortunately, the bulk of the people I work with came from low socioeconomic groups, and they didn't have opportunities that are available to many of us. So they were coming from a real deficit emotionally, mentally, like in terms of their intelligence, the whole shebang. And because of all of those other elements, when they were anxious, when they were experiencing anxiety, it showed up in a different way than what I was experiencing. So I didn't recognize the anxiety in myself. What I saw in myself was me not being good enough, me not being fast enough, me being weak, me not being able to focus on what I really needed to be able to focus on. And as the journey progressed, what I learnt was by seeking help, I started to have these really visceral experiences. And when I started to understand what anxiety was for me, I started to have experiences that I would describe as heightened periods of anxiety. And when it got too much, when it got to a place where I was unable to breathe properly, when it felt like my legs were about to give way and I had to sit down, and when I would sit at my desk and just not be able to focus, and had so many days of really, really disliking myself, I sought medical intervention because I thought, I know this looks like depression. It smells like depression. It's depression, but I'm messing around. I did certain tests, went to the GP, and the long and short of it is that the GP immediately said, from what I've described doing the test, I was experiencing severe, moderate depression and anxiety. And of course, they wanted to prescribe pills. And I was like, I don't want that. Not because I think I'm too good, not because there's any shame, but it doesn't feel like a classic biomedical situation. It felt more like I was spiritually empty, is the only way I could describe it. And then I had a conversation with a therapist, and she said, what I was describing as a heightened period of anxiety, those were panic attacks. And the panic attacks were unchecked anxiety. The anxiety was unchecked depression, low mood. And I was like, okay, bingo. Then I saw another GP who was of an Asian background. So the GP I'd seen before was white British. I saw a GP from an Asian background, and she asked me about my vitamin D. And I was like, oh, I don't know, but I'm always iron low. And she was explaining the difference between vitamin D and iron and what it does. So did a test. My vitamin D was so low, it was ridiculous. She then decided to do a test whereby they look at the makeup of my immune system, and that revealed a lot. So I was very deficient in vitamin D, so I had to be prescribed this really high level vitamin D. That had a knock-on effect on my immune system. So my neutrophils, which are part of your white blood cells, were really, really low, to a point where it was described as mild neutropenia. But the GP said, if it continues, we'll have to consider a bone marrow transplant where they inject white blood cells so that you can generate some more. And I said to her that I would like to take some time, consult a nutritional therapist. I would like to do some holistic things because I don't think it's straight up biomedical. Mm-hmm. As soon as she said that, I knew that it was psychosomatic, and I knew that my immune system suppression was linked to emotional suppression, mm-hmm. and me internalizing feelings, emotions, and suppressing them down. And like every time I felt weak, I became more productive. Every time I felt like I wasn't doing enough, even though I was doing a hell of a lot, I would take on another project. So rather than allowing these feelings to bubble up and explore them, I was so scared of the feelings. Like I literally thought, there is so much pain, so much discord here, I will die, that I would rather suppress them and do more work, be more productive, do more courses, learn more stuff, serve more people, take on more complex cases, juggle, so that I could have this outward expression of success. It didn't matter that I was having my family help me with childcare all over the place, because it would be okay, because in the long term, my daughter will benefit from my success and I'm being a role model. What was I being a role model for? I was being a role model for abandoning yourself, okay? So that was, and I realized that what I was experiencing previously were symptoms of burnout. And it wasn't, you know, big up Bananarama. It wasn't what I was doing. It was the way I was doing it and the culture in which we live that supports this kind of forever on culture, forever productive culture, because that is where your success and worth and all of that kind of stuff comes from.
You say this in your about page about us, and particularly women, generation Gen X women. We're Gen X, aren't we? Yeah, we're Gen X.
I always forget which we're Zennials, but I think we're Gen X. Yes,
Zennials. I like that. Yeah, exactly. On the cusp. but you say beautifully in your about page about how this value that we put, we're Gen X women in particular, put on their output, and that is where our value is found.
Because I think that we were coming out in a big way. We were in the workplace in a big way. We were ascending up the corporate ladder. Of course, there was that glass ceiling in a bigger way. Like, I was reading somewhere that Gen X was the most unsupervised generation, because that is when there were more mums going out to work. So we're seeing that. We're seeing our mums sacrifice left, right and centre for success, be like a man. Anything you can do, I can do better, all of that kind of stuff. And so we sold ourselves out for this outward expression of success. So it was, there was one day my daughter came home from school. Well, I picked her up and she was talking about, she spent some time with the pastoral lead or whatever they're called, because she was feeling sad. She was feeling a bit anxious. So of course the first one was like, what? You're going to other people when you feel sad and anxious? And then I was like, wow, hold up, wait a minute. She actually registered that she was feeling sad and anxious. There were friendship issues going on, and they had some end of term tests that she was anxious about. And she knew that there was a place that she could go and talk about these things. And I just thought, how bloody brilliant that you think that you are entitled to this, number one. And number two, how wonderful is it that my child is in a school where these things are acknowledged? If I went to school and said to Miss Huntley, who was absolutely brilliant and lovely, Miss Huntley, I'm feeling sad and anxious, she would have asked me what on earth I'm feeling sad and anxious about. Mm-mm. And then she would have done that. Do you know how many children would want to be in your blah, 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 blah?
Yeah.
It's a different time altogether.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was that whole ladette culture. I can drink pints just like the man can drink pints, and then I'll go to work with my hangover and I'll do what I've got to do, not thinking about. I don't even think we have the knowledge about our hormonal cycles and all of that kind of stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah, exactly. And it's also what you were saying before, that self-sacrificial, just as a woman, that feeling that in order to achieve that success and in order to, actually, I think it goes way, way back. I think it's been going on for thousands of years. It's the role of woman is one of a sacrificial role.
Absolutely.
You know, you work hard, you do it for your family, you do it for your children, you do it for your parents, you do it for whoever it is that you're taking care of. That is the role. And so that
however,
is what we step into.
That's what we step into. However, the difference is before us taking space in the workplace in the way that we are now, women were bringing up children in communities.
Yeah.
And even if those communities were judgmental AF, they had support and they were just parenting, whatever that looked like. And yes, I know that depending on the social group you came from, the background you came from, I know that women have always worked, but in terms of having hands around to support you and wisdom to tap into, even if that wisdom was guiding you to be sacrificial, you had more around you. We have never parented, in the Western world at least, we have never parented in isolation as much as we have in recent times. And if you think about the evolution of human beings, how we've evolved, this piece of evolution has happened so quickly, we're only now just starting to unravel and unpick what has happened. It's like in this iteration of parents, this iteration of humanity, we're like toddlers.
Yeah.
We're only just getting to understand how we work.
Yeah. Don't you, in terms of the parenting, particularly women, mothers, I see a lot of stay-at-home mums very burnt out. And so in your experience, do you think that is because of this lack of support? Because I also wonder if there's also, some of them used to be in positions of responsibility and positions of power, relative power in the workplace, and be within a community in the workplace that was intellectually stimulating. And I feel that sometimes that step into parenting, which is a lot about childcare, changing nappies, making food, cleaning the house, doing the shopping, but during the day, probably hanging out with other mothers who are talking about that same stuff. I sometimes wonder if that shift is also causing a deep frustration and, you know, having once been out there, being filled with these dreams and ambitions of what you're going to do out there in the world then come into just parenting. I don't mean just because it's a huge full-time job.
Yeah, I get you.
But there's also, do you see that there might also be, because I keep wondering if that's also what's going on, is that tension between what the place they were once in to now be coming to the sole parenting, if that's also causing anxiety?
Mm-hmm. I think that it is a combination. I think that there is not one source of whatever it is that makes us feel like we're not enough. I think that we have, as the more sophisticated we have become, the more detached we have become. So rather than considering ourselves in an integrated way, we live in our heads and we compartmentalize everything. So we are becoming human doings rather than human beings. Mm. And we have forgotten what it is to be. So whether you are a parent that is staying at home, back at work, whether you're a parent of a baby, a preteen, a teen, the parent of an adult, because this is what I'm seeing anyway, because we are focused on the aspect of our humanity, which is the doing, we are not allowing ourselves to be who we really are. Therefore, we create benchmarks that come from everywhere else other than ourselves. We then take on these benchmarks as our own, and we fall into these booby traps of believing that we need to be good, productive, doing all the things, being all the things, being everywhere. My child is playing violin, they're doing hockey, they're doing swimming. They were 3 months old and they were doing backflips. Mine is at Oxford and they're seven. Because rather than taking time to get to know ourselves, because that's not encouraged, part of our socialization. Okay, let's just go there. Let's step into the world of my auntie, Brené Brown. We are conditioned. So we are social creatures. We are built to live in communities. We're built to live in ecosystems, and we thrive together. Because we live in hierarchical societies, we then start to look at one way as the way. So we then are conditioned to fit in with the way. And when we start to express part of ourselves that don't fit in with the way, those parts of us are suppressed. And it comes from a good, well-meaning place because we want to be accepted. But what we are starting to realize now with advances in neuroscience, psychology, all the rest of it, is that actually we are better off when we belong rather than when we are accepted. Because we are so focused on being accepted, and we think that acceptance, fitting in, will lead to us belonging, we then start to embody a version of ourselves that gets accepted, that fits in. So we detach from who we really are, and it gets suppressed really deep down. So we don't know who we are. We become parents, and then we start looking at our children as an avenue to fulfill the needs we haven't met, because we haven't been able to meet them, because those needs were suppressed, because it didn't fit in with the fitting in acceptance model. And then we are unaware of this. So we have our children and we are hell-bent on them fitting in. We are hell-bent on them achieving success. So then we project all of our voids onto our children and then want them to fulfill the destinies that we haven't been able to, even though we still have time and we're not aware of it. We think we're doing it for the best of our children. So we're not seeing ourselves authentically. Therefore, we are unable. Our world is shaped by this distorted vision of who we are, which means we are then unable to see our children for who they are. When we're able to see ourselves authentically, we will then be able to embody, what was the name again? David Winnicott, someone Winnicott. He was a pediatrician, and I think he was a Jungian psychologist in the 50s that came up with the concept of a good enough mother. when you are able to be authentic, you are then able to step away from this, I'm a good mum, and you're able to be a good enough mother.
Yes.
Being a good enough mother then gives you space to know that you will make mistakes. It is okay to make mistakes, and it is okay to admit to your child that you have made a mistake. Your child then sees you as a whole person. You're seeing your child as a whole person, and you're moving away from this model of perfection where you've got to be flawless into a space whereby you know you're going to make mistakes. And rather than be so steadfast on this idea of authoritarianism, of perfectionism, of being the all-seeing, all-knowing parent, you are then able to, you're then able to embody those, you know, all the stuff that we do self-care for, this too shall pass, all of that. You're able to take that on in a really meaningful way. So there was and this, all of you lot panicking about your babies, you wait until you have a preteen, teenager and an adult child. This is where we need to be talking about most. When your child becomes more emotionally aware, more emotionally sophisticated, and can start to see those cracks, if you are in a position where you can accept that you, it's okay to be good enough, you are going to make mistakes, you will start to see that you making mistakes and admitting to those mistakes helps your child. So my daughter regularly pulls me up on stuff, and she will say, "Mummy, you're saying this because you haven't done this," or "Mummy, this is what you want." Okay, sometimes it does bite you on the bum, and your ego will be like, "What the? I'm your hoover." But it shows up in things like, "Yeah, I read the studies on how playing a musical instrument helps your child's intelligence, so I insisted on the cello lessons." And my daughter kept saying, "I don't want to do the cello. You're going to do the cello. You're doing the cello lessons, but you're not doing the practice. Why did you tell the teacher that you don't want to do the grade?" "Because, Mum, I don't want to do it. You want me to do it." And then I had to check myself. Why do I want her to do it? Because I gave up, not the saxophone, the other one.
Clarinet.
Clarinet. I gave up the clarinet. And sometimes I sit down and think to myself, I'd love when I'm stressed just to get on my clarinet and blow a good tune. How often do I think of that? Not often enough, but I projected that onto her. So then I was like, hold up, wait a minute. The void you have on yourself, you're projecting onto her. So what are you doing by forcing her to do the cello that she doesn't want to do, then criticizing her for not doing the cello properly? You're sending her a message that she's not enough, she's not good enough for something she doesn't even want to do.
Mm. And if you recognize yourself in this, rather than feel what I could feel coming up as the shame and the guilt, it's going back to be a good enough mum, good enough parent, and admit to yourself, and if your child is old enough, admit to them that that's what you're doing, and then correct it, and then heal that by voicing it and accepting it and owning it. Then you can do something about it.
Then you can do something about it. And something that really helped me move into this space was forgiving myself, was literally purging. So I used to think that these feelings, these tricky feelings, could literally kill me, until it got too much and I had to allow things to flow. And as I was allowing these things to flow, I was like, this is really handy information. Let's just explore what's here. Let's allow it to flow. I was doing some full moon letting go stuff, and I couldn't let it go. Why couldn't I let it go? Because I was in the mindset that I recognize these things and I let them go, that's it, they're gone. And as I started to develop my coaching program, what I realized was it was less about the letting go, and it was more about actually embracing these things, giving them space, saying, "Do you know what? I see you. And at some point in time, you served a purpose, but you're not serving a purpose anymore. So I'm going to love you. I'm going to acknowledge you. I'm going to give you space within my 360 degrees. I'm not ignoring you, but you're not going to take up as much space as you have done previously." And it just came, and I forgive you. something, it was like a brick in my womb. And I was like, there it is. So we, you know, I've seen this phrase within feminism circles about no woman left behind, and I have adopted no feeling left behind. You're mine. You're part of me.
Yeah.
You cannot overwhelm me because you are part of me. I steer the ship. You are a passenger, but you're not getting a big seat. You're getting a cheap seat. You're sitting in the back. And every once in a while, you're going to come to the front and you're going to ask a question. I'm going to have a discussion. I'm going to wrap you up in a bubble of love. I'm going to hug you and kiss you. And you're going to go back to your back seat. And the other thing that was really helpful for me was in that forgiveness piece, rather than telling myself the story on the 2nd of October, I told her off, I shouldn't have, I didn't do this, I underparented when I was social working. What I did was, and this is proper social work, I started scanning the stories for the themes, and I started to analyze those themes. And analyzing those themes took me to the core. And the core was all of those messages, all of those experiences that I had that told me that I'm not valuable, I'm not enough, I'm not worthy. So what really needed to happen was that I needed to get into that space. And, you know, there are lots of people that, oh, just trust, all of that. I'm not a just trust person, and I've made peace with that. I was then able to start looking for the evidence that enabled me to see that these stories of value, worth, enoughness, and all of that came from a place. But then I started to scan the world and provide myself with evidence that supported those. And the same way that I could provide myself with evidence that supported the lack story, I could start to look at the evidence, the really real, beautiful, pure, gorgeous evidence I had that was an antidote to those stories. So now I've trained myself, when that story bubbles up, I squash down the story and I look at what is underpinning that and provide myself with evidence that shows me otherwise. And sometimes I have done some real shit. I have. I'm a human being. I'm allowed that, and I keep it moving. We need to get out of the habit of retelling ourselves these stories over and over again and making them self-fulfilling prophecies. I realized that forgiveness enables me to be miserable for the shortest time possible without avoiding stuff. And I think that is a beautiful aim. Right, this thing has bubbled up. How am I going to be miserable for the shortest time possible without glossing over and avoiding things?
Accept it, love it, own it, forgive it.
Own it. You're mine, but you are mine. That feeling of lack cannot overwhelm me. And that's like with the joy piece comes in, the settled state of confidence and hope, contentment, confidence and hope comes in. When we're on this personal development journey, when we're doing this healing work, we take it so seriously. We're dissecting, we're analyzing, we're pulling apart, but we don't take time to integrate. I love a bit of nature. Can you imagine, you know, Lucy Sheridan brought to my attention the poem Good Timber. We are good timber. We are not going to be able to be good timber if we spend all of our time digging through the soil, playing about with our roots. When we're constantly digging our soil and playing about with our roots, we overexploit the ground that is supposed to be the place that nurtures us and enables us to grow into these big, beautiful trees. When we do the work and we have a look at our soil, we look at the condition of our roots, we are then able to have an accurate view of what's going on and then nourish it. We don't stay there rolling around. You know, I say all the time, shit is fertilizer. Shit is only fertilizer if you allow yourself to grow through it. When you just stay there, oh my God, I did this, and then I do that. When we stay in those very primal survival feelings, guilt, shame, fear, all of that, we're not allowing ourselves to grow and stand tall. We go through seasons. I'm turning around and looking to my right because there's a tree in my neighbor's garden that gives me a lot of guidance. That tree at the moment is stark naked. The leaves are off. It's winter. But the trunk and the branches are still strong. That tree knows that there's a time of the year that my leaves fall off, then they're going to blossom again, then they're going to be resplendent and green, then they're going to be all kinds of wonderful amber golden shades, then they're going to fall off. This is the process. So rather than the tree, oh my God, my leaves have fallen off, what's going to happen? The roots, the soil is strong, so that tree knows that it's a cycle. And that is why I think in the self-care world, there's a bit of a, it's a bit disjointed. I think that a lot of the self-care that we see floating around is thinly veiled capitalism, because it keeps you in a place where you're consuming, whereas self-care that is really nourishing and is really replenishing your cup and is really soothing your inner child and is really enabling you to connect mind, body, spirit, it enables us to be resilient.
Yes.
Resilient. Sorry, I know I bounced around all over the place,
oh,
but it
God,
is all connected.
So, it is all connected. You have done it beautifully. Oh, honestly, the wisdom that just flows out of you. I said it at the start. Wow. This is why I love these conversations with you and I value them so much. There are so many things as you were talking about, for example, letting go. Sometimes I think when we're letting go, we're actually rejecting. We're doing it too fast before owning it. And forgive,
and then our inner child has a tantrum and takes us right back in iteration of that.
Then you're rejecting that part of yourself. And like you say, it's the 360. You need to own the 360 in every shade, particularly the dark shadows.
Mm-hmm. And those shadows, sorry, may I just add, in my exploration, I was like, oh my goodness. So one of the things that I used to get really hooked up on was growing up with, there were two things, growing up with the concept that children should be seen and not heard, and also that I'm not serious, I'm too gesticular, I'm too playful, all of that. So those things became shadows. When I actually peeked through that beautiful velvet curtain into my other 180 degrees, that thing that was a shadow, that thing that was a source of shame, that's where my joy was, that's where the essence of me was, because the shame I had about being playful is the very thing that people seek me out for.
Yes.
The shame I had about being too gesticular, that is that gesticulation, where appropriate, is like a salve that soothes when we're doing that really deep work. And that children should be seen or not heard that I internalized and meant I'm too loud, I'm too much, it is my, I'm going to call it too muchness, but it's not because I believe that I'm too much, it is my bigness that enables me to hold the spaces that I do for people, look at their trauma in the eyes and say, I'm holding space for this, you're safe to let it go. And had I not had delved into what I believed were my shadows, and don't get me wrong, there are shadow parts of those behaviors, but had I not actually looked at it, using my light to look at those areas, I never would have understood that the same place that I felt, I thought my weaknesses come from, in inverted commas, is the same place my strength comes from. Our emotions come from the same place. It's about being able to decipher, contextualize, forget all of this getting over, overcoming. It's about soothing and embracing. It's about bringing them close to you so that you can inspect them and then putting them on the shelf within yourself that they need to go into. And yeah, things are going to fall off the shelf, but when you know where they go, you can put them back where they belong.
Yeah. Exactly, without rejecting, without sending them out.
And don't get me wrong, it's a continuous process. Mm-hmm. I'm not sitting down here like I'm some kind of guru with incense, you know, on a cliff somewhere. But I'm saying this because this provides me with information so that when these my morning pages, oh my goodness, when I'm in one of my spaces where I'm feeling disconnected from myself, what happens now is in my morning pages, I start with this blur. And naturally, before I know what's what, the blur turns into acceptance, turns into affirmations, and I leave those pages on a high. I never, ever leave those pages. Let me rewind. Let me not be so. I haven't yet since that whole forgiveness piece, come to a place whereby I'm leaving my morning pages feeling bleh. And it's not a conscious thing whereby I've got to make this feel good. Literally, I am now in a place where I've lit up new neurological pathways. And so I'm now starting to default into, this is the information. This is really helpful information. What is this information really telling me? Okay, let's alchemize that. Mm. Whereas before, I just would have sat in there ruminating, I'm a bad person. Next thing you know, sinusitis, laryngitis, bronchitis, you name it, I've got it.
That's so interesting, because I'm a real believer in getting it all out. Just voice it, get it all out. But what I love is that you add to it, you look at all of that stuff that's on the page or that you've just voiced and you go, this is really handy information.
Yeah.
Let's take a look, rather than going there and then sitting in the blare, or then trying to like let it go and essentially reject it. You're like, okay, now let's take a look. Let's have a little look around, see what I can learn from this, how I can own it, embrace it, accept it, and then put it back on the shelf.
Mm-hmm. And for me, that is the real inner child work, because all of that blur, that's where it's coming from. That is the phase in my life where those messages were embedded in my unconscious mind. When my nephew is three, and when I'm thinking about inner child work, there's a lot of inner child behavior that I see in him. And I do believe that our inner children are like preschoolers. And I think to myself, would I do that to him? No, I soothe him. I understand him. I use very simple language so that he can start to process and understand himself, not try and shut that down. One of the things that has happened as we become more sophisticated, and all of us that are very clever, that like personal development, that like to read books, that like to read blogs and listen to podcasts, we become so clever, we hide in our cleverness. Mm-hmm. So when I start to get really slick and really clever with my words, and when I start to become really, really poetic, I call bullshit. Let's get back to basics. Let's use the language of a five-year-old. What is this about? Mm. My emotions hear that, and then I can really start to heal and soothe. When I'm trying to be too clever, I'm just trying to speak to my 3, 4, 5-year-old inner child like I'm speaking to another adult. I'm not speaking to another adult, but what I will not indulge in anymore is allowing a tempestuous 3, 4, 5-year-old that is viewing the fact that I want to coach more people one-to-one as a saber-toothed tiger to dominate my decisions and my actions.
So you're looking to coach more people. Well, those of you listening who want a piece of Tamu, want this wonderful, wise Dr. Joy to coach you, head on to the show notes and listen towards the end, and we will tell you exactly how they can do that. But first, I want to pick up the story again, because so we got to where you were so ill that they were considering giving you a marrow bone transplant, right? Just a quick question. You mentioned that it was then an Asian doctor which detected this. Is this because it's... What was the relevance for
it? What she detected was the vitamin D.
Right.
Yeah. So vitamin D is actually a hormone. It's not a vitamin. But vitamin D is one of the key foundations of your immune system. So my vitamin D being very low, and that's the thing, it is not mind or body. It is all one. We are connected. So from the research I have done, my vitamin D would have prevented any work that I was doing on a cerebral level from having any real impact, because I wouldn't have the physical health necessary to be able to onboard all of that kind of stuff. So we want to take on all this work. We want to make all of these changes, but we're not checking that we actually have the energy to make the changes in the first place and sustain the changes. Doing this work, because we think about growth work, whether it's therapy, coaching, or any of those sorts of things, mentoring, because we consider it a sitting down work, we think about it as very cognitive work. It's total body work. Mm. If you do not have the physical energy, if you do not have the health, you're not going to be able to implement the changes that you want to. And sometimes you will have brain fog that will prevent you from accessing your brain in the way that you could do if you didn't have that brain fog. So it was very important for me to take a integrated, holistic approach. The same way that I'm saying leave no feeling behind, I couldn't leave any part of my earthly expression behind because it was all interconnected. So it was about the vitamin D from a supplement source, trying to get outside more, about the food that I eat, about recognizing the link between the food and the food that I eat and how I function. Really tracking my cycle and understanding how my hormonal changes impact how I am as a person. So days 25 to 28, rather than telling myself I'm lazy because I need a nap, I know that my hormone changes mean that I need a nap.
Yeah.
Day 23-ish, 24-ish, if I'm feeling really down on myself, if I haven't recognized which day in my cycle I'm at, I then check, it's not because I'm rubbish. It's because my hormones are doing bits. What do I need to do? More kale today, please. Making sure I'm drinking enough water. Even the fact that we're, 60-whatever% water, making sure that I'm drinking adequate water. All of that makes a big difference. Breathing properly. The most profound thing was how much I take for granted breath, how I breathe, and what a difference to my immune system, my brain functioning, just reminding myself throughout the day to breathe properly has had. And then in all of that, really recognizing the wisdom of my body, because my body was screaming at me for years. Mm. There was not a point in time that my body wasn't telling me I needed to do something, and it brought out the big guns of the panic attacks because I wasn't listening to everything else. So it was about me really understanding what my body was telling me. So rather than, for example, going to yoga because I want to be more supple, I go to yoga because that's a really good opportunity for me to connect with my, we talk about our higher self, like it's outside. Our higher selves are within us. So it really helps me to get deep within that heart space so I can connect with my higher self. It really helps me be in a space where I'm open to the wisdom of my ancestors. And then the gym. I love weightlifting. At first, it was going to the gym because I understand I'm 42 and a half. As my body changes and I start to move towards perimenopause, my bone density will change and all of that. When I was actually able to understand how we can change things on a cellular level and how we can have commune with our subconscious mind and actually stop thinking about it like it's a separate part, actually thinking about my brain as a whole, that repetition of doing the weights, that kind of like heel-toe motion on the treadmill or whatever it is I'm using, are beautiful opportunities for me to communicate with my subconscious mind and have all the rest of my brain involved. So rather than me going to the gym just as a space where I could build my, I want to have muscles. I think that they look very sexy. But it wasn't just about my physicality. It's an opportunity for me to do my affirmations, an opportunity to really register what my body feels like when I do certain things. And it gave me, and I was doing it for myself. It wasn't a lot of self-care that I'm seeing, particularly with people that are coaches, with people that are mentors, people that are entrepreneurs. They do this mindset work and it's not about themselves. That mindset work is like a workflow system. It's always trickling back to the work. When I'm in the gym, that is for me. That is an opportunity for me to connect with me. Offshoot of that is that I end up having wonderful ideas. I end up thinking about things in different ways, things that have been stuck for a little while. I'm able to alchemize into something that is useful. But that is because I went there for me, and that is a byproduct. Because something that I realize is, particularly when you're an entrepreneur, solopreneur, you're working on your own, you get really obsessed. you get really self-centering, you get overthinking. And when I'm in that space where I'm actually looking after myself and nurturing myself for myself, something just opens up. And then you start to think laterally rather than that tunnel vision. It's like, you know, I'm in my alpha brainwaves. I'm feeling open. I'm feeling secure. I'm feeling grounded. I'm feeling safe. And then I'm able to be like, oh, okay. So when you were really obsessing about the copy for this particular product, what you were doing was centering yourself. Think about your customers. But that's an offshoot because I'm looking after myself. Because what I realize is you only go as deep as you have gone with yourself. You only care for others as deeply as you care for yourself. You only serve your community as deeply as you have served yourself. So I make it my business to serve myself, to connect with myself very deeply from that space of joy, that settled state of contentment, confidence, and hope. And I'm repeating this a lot with intention.
It's like you are the queen of self-care wisdom. It's
okay,
amazing.
Thanks. I'm going to write that down. That will be my strap line.
I'll take
Instagram bio.
Honestly, because what you did, I just do want to, so because you did mention it, and I thought it must be relevant that you first had your first doctor was white British and your second doctor was Asian. Did the Asian doctor have a more holistic approach? And is that, what was the relevance of?
I don't think it was necessarily a more holistic approach, but that was the first doctor that spelled out the need for vitamin D.
Right.
She didn't talk to me about vitamin D being a hormone. And like, I'm a social worker.
Yeah.
We research. We're evidence-based practitioners. So I will always talk about myself being in the middle of science and spirituality. Mm. If you tell me something, I'm going to go off and research it. So she told me about the vitamin D because she knew about vitamin D and low mood. And I am a very dark-skinned black woman. So she just knew that vitamin D would have an impact if I was low.
Right.
That's where she was coming from.
Okay.
And actually, something that's quite interesting is since then, the other doctors, not that I'm like hanging around with the doctors in the surgery all the time, but I have seen and heard the doctors, heard because family members going to the GP, checking in, and the doctor that saw me originally, who is my favourite doctor, big up Dr. Small, she started talking about vitamin D, and she was talking about recommending vitamin D to all of her clients, even very fair-skinned white people, because we live in a part of the world that doesn't get a lot of sunlight. There is a recommendation that everybody takes vitamin D supplements. So that doctor wasn't coming from more of a holistic space. And I would hazard a guess that in 2017, even if she was thinking that way, she may not have felt comfortable as a biomedical doctor sharing that, because it's only very recently that doctors are sort of like coming out with their more holistic, more integrated practices. Whereas before, you were a quack.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that was that. And I do think that we have made massive shifts in the way that we understand our inner workings. There have been big there's been big progression in the world of neuroscience, in psychology. More people are tapped into the world of positive psychology, which has quite a different approach to traditional psychology, which kind of looks at us as we are broken. So let's get you from minus to zero.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas positive psychology is what gave me the confidence to say, okay, then I'm going to take up space within this coaching world with my social worky spirituality kind of stuff too, because social work, like the biomedical model, takes you from minus to zero. And I just saw in my existential crisis a disco ball of women who had the tools and capacity to thrive, but were living at survival because we knew no other way. So I use my social work background with delving into the world of positive psychology, neuroscience, and spirituality to take those practices I learnt and used across 15, 16 years to get people from minus to zero, to help people get from zero to one. Because I believe the trickiest part of the journey, because we've been brought up in a survival paradigm, is to shift from that zero to one. And I think once we've got from zero to one, we can get from one to eight, nine, 10 really quickly, but we get really stuck in the zero to one space because it feels spoilt, it feels entitled. People think that it's very middle class. People will say, oh, you know, that's like Western problems. And I think that Western problems are valid and right and true when we're experiencing them. I don't think that we should dismiss them, because there are people in the world that are starving. There are always going to be people in the world that are starving. And I don't say that dismissively. But when we're looking after ourselves and when we're putting ourselves in the position to thrive, so like the women that I work with, one of the things that I help them to do is slow down so that they can look after themselves, and then they automatically speed up. So women have come to me because they want to feel more joyful, they want to feel more connected. And one of the offshoots of that is that they're doing less work and earning more money. When you're doing less work and you're earning more money and you're in that thriving space, you then start to think, right, this is something that I really believe in. I'm either going to use my financial resources or the space that I now have to support that cause. So that's why I talk about ecosystem a lot. When we are connecting with ourselves and we're then able to connect with other human beings on a soul level, we have more space to operate within an ecosystem.
Yeah.
Lest we forget, we come from the ecosystem that is Earth. We might walk on concrete, but Mother Earth is underneath us, supporting us all the time. And we would do well to remember that.
Oh my God, I love you so much. I didn't think it was possible to love you more, but now after this, I really do. Tamu, you are just right. How can people come and work with you and have you guide them from surviving to thriving, to find that joy, to live from that space? How do you work with people? Please tell us all the many ways we can get a piece of you. From Instagram to one-to-one coaching.
First and foremost, Selena is declaring her love for me. I've proposed to this woman on a number of occasions.
And I'm accepting wholeheartedly.
It's on record.
For life.
On record for life. And listen, I'm a Klingon. Once we are wifey for lifey, okay?
Yes, this is the best day ever.
And I must admit, though, I have a number of wives, but I'm
okay with that.
With them deeply, okay?
I'm okay
I connect
with
to them
that.
On a deep level. So, how you can work with me? There are a number of ways you can work with me. So, I have a beautiful membership, group membership, which is the ecosystem. It is literally a reflection of Mother Earth. So my group membership, we have weekly workshops, we have an expert that comes in once a month. Selena has been one of those experts that
I have
joined us to share wisdom, and it's a beautiful place for us to commune, hold space, get some guidance from me, also peer guidance, and that really helps us to understand what our self-care needs are and maintain. And we do need that maintenance because we haven't been conditioned to look after ourselves. We've been conditioned to look after everybody else, especially as women. And the people that hang out in my ecosystem, well, they don't hang out, they form part of the ecosystem. We all live and breathe together, nourishing each other. We tend to be women who are age 35 plus, because I think that there is something quite specific that we need. Other people are welcome. If you're younger, you will learn a lot. But my target audience are women who are kind of late 30s, 40s and beyond. So that is just a really beautiful place where people say they're able to breathe easy and share things, whether it's joys or things that are more tricky, where they're unable to share them even with partners and loved ones, because there's no judgment, babe. We connect with you as you are. On the 21st of March, I am having a spring solstice retreat, because if you don't know, get to know. This is not the new year. It's the beginning of the year, but it's not the new year. The new year is spring, okay? So I will be holding a mind-body day retreat experience at Benk & Bow in Aldgate. There will be yoga, sound healing, and some really beautiful deep coaching with me. Deep coaching with humor with me. Then I have one-to-one coaching available. I couldn't sit down and tell you what that consists of because I need to speak with you because I build my package around you and your needs. It's not about me telling you what you need. It's about me holding space for you to work out what you need and guiding you towards that. So the best thing to do would be to book a connect conversation with me to see how I can help you. And then I have a group coaching program, but actually I'm not sure when I'm going to be running that next, so we'll just stick a pin in that one. And then something else, all the things, on the 19th of February, I will be having the first in a series of women's circles, which will be taking place at a beautiful boutique wellness space in Knightsbridge, darling.
Of
course, called Gazelli House, Gazelli. They are a beauty, wellness, skincare brand, all kinds of holistic therapies that is literally spirituality and science meet each other. And that is because I'm coming across, or I've been in so many circumstances where women are sharing their joy or their pain and they're being shut down because the people around them can't manage those feelings. And when I think about it, I get really emotional about it because I feel that we need a space where we can just be and share, not necessarily be advised or seek counsel, but just allow ourselves to share and feel. So I will be doing that every other month at Gazelli House. I will be providing food because it's after work and it is literally going to be the place where I am embodying Dr. Joy and all of the science and spiritual stuff. Because I think that we just need a place to connect on a soul, spiritual level. So those are the ways at the moment.
Wow. And where should we go to find out all about that? What's your website?
The best place would be my website, which is www.live360.com, and it is LiveThrsixty.com.
And then Instagram.
Words, you can tell. And my Instagram also is live360, letters, not words, LiveThrsixty. I'm very active on Instagram. That is my friendship bench. That is where I form relationships with people and then propose.
That is where you find your wives.
That is where I find my wives, my joyful harem. Those are the places that you can find me. And I generally share everything that I'm doing on Instagram. So that's a good place to start.
Yeah. And your podcast as well, of course.
Oh, yes, my podcast too. I just thought I've said so many things.
Let's get it all in.
Let's get it all. My podcast, 360 Conversations, you can find it wherever you listen to podcast conversations. And I must say that my episode with Selena was all of the things, all of the feels, all of the wild woman wisdom.
It was so good. So yeah, I will include a link to that one. If you've enjoyed this conversation, then head over to that. But I highly, highly recommend, if anyone's been listening to this and has been resonating left, right, and center, and you feel like you want to, you're ready to go from surviving or even feeling burnt out to thriving. Mm-hmm. Tamu is your woman. She is the woman. She is Dr. Joy.
Hey.
Surgery is open.
It's open.
Tamu, thank you so, so much.
Thank you. I have really enjoyed this conversation. And I just love being in your company.
So do I. May there be many more conversations like this, recorded and in real life.
Face to face. I'm here for it. Hear that, ancestors? Make it happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
for listening to the Project Love podcast. We really hope you enjoy this episode. And if you did, then come and subscribe on iTunes and we'll deliver each new episode straight to your device. And we would love it if you would leave us a review to help us spread the love far and wide. And if you can't think of anything to write, then just tap 5 stars and say, best podcast ever.